an event parking district is basically active management of parking to better manage activities and travel demand in this large event area. We already have in place a transportation management plan that's been in place basically since the Rose Garden was built. That has worked well over the years and allows us to manage these events, basically the travel demand, the traffic that's associated with these large events in an effective manner. We haven't had really a very sophisticated or active role in managing parking, and that's what this event parking district could do. So currently, this area that we're talking about is included within the Lloyd Meter District, and so it's an area that already has metered parking. And meter hours extend until 10 p.m. every Monday through Saturday in the area west of Northeast Grand, and the meter rate in that area is $1. So we have already taken steps quite some time ago, to extend meter hours and to price the parking. Albeit it's not priced very high, it's relatively cheap, but it is priced. And because at the time we did that, we only had mechanical meters in place. And what a lot of people may not be aware of is a lot of the meters that we still have in that area are still the single space mechanical meters. So we didn't have a lot of flexibility in terms of how we could manage the parking. We couldn't easily vary the times of operation or the rates. The other thing to point out, which I think is obvious to all of you, but that we do have a large public investment in transit and to serve this district. So we have basically all the LRT lines and now the Portland streetcar loop, which serve this district very well. So this is one of the most transit-rich environments we have in the city in terms of our capacity to serve people via transit.
And, also, it may be too obvious for you to mention, but the transit center there is very well used, and the bike, before bikes can get on Widler, they first often go through the Rose Quarter. So it's not only transit, but active.
Yeah, and it really is an active transportation hub with the East Side Esplanade leading right up into the district. So this next map shows you what the current configuration of the Lloyd Meter District is. So the blue line around the shaded gray area shows the limits of the existing Lloyd Meter District, and the graphic actually indicates the length of meters that are shown there. You can see in the area of the Rose Garden Arena and our convention center that there aren't very many meters actually on the street areas around there. That's because there isn't very much parking on the street areas around there, and so there isn't very much parking that could be metered. Now, currently, as I said, we extend the hours to 10 o'clock. Over to Grand Avenue. So if you're looking at area to the west of Grand, that's the area where we currently are essentially managing the parking and pricing it during event times.
We've discussed along the way on this project, if you could go back one map, thanks, Ms. Ames, is that the actual boundary of the parking district is Broadway. And so if you go to any event in the Rose Quarter, there's the ability to get free parking into the industrial area north of Broadway. So we have no meters there at all.
Well, actually, we have just a smattering of meters, half-block intrusion right into there. Yeah,
fair enough.
Yeah, but very, very, very few meters north of Broadway.
While you're on the map, could you just tell me and others who may be wondering what's with the yellow striping on the pavement around the Lloyd Center with the Portland flags? Do you happen to know the answer to that? Or do you, Mayor?
Yes. It's as part of implementing the Lloyd TMA,
yes.
And as part of the neighborhood plan and transportation plan for Lloyd Crossing, and the demand and The demand right now and the existing demand, we think that will happen with safer and larger and more robust bicycle lanes. That's what you're seeing there.
So those are bicycle lanes or buffers to the bicycle lanes?
Could you articulate your question again? I don't think I understood.
It's kind of a random thought, but I have been wondering, and I think other citizens have been wondering, on the pavement next to the Lloyd, on Multnomah, I think it
okay,
is.
Okay, on Northeast Multnomah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then on Holiday, there's these wide yellow painted strips adjacent to the bike lane.
It's a buffer area that will eventually have some planters in it.
Right. Oh, okay.
It'll be much clearer once, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. And the flag is some artistic and
some artistic liberty to put the Portland flag in that area.
If you'll notice the little bicycle people on the bike lanes, many of them have been hacked so that they have little unique features.
Thank you. Sorry to interrupt.
Okay. Okay, next slide. So part of the objective here would be to influence travel behavior through pricing parking. So quite simplistically, today, if you were taking a round trip on Max for you and a friend to attend an event, it would cost you $10 in terms of your transit fare to go to and from the event for your group. If you're parking on street in our metered area, typical time might be 3 hours, maybe four, but it would be $1 an hour, so $3 for your parking. And if you parked in one of the east-west Rose Quarter garages, currently, the event parking rate is $13 an hour. So you can see in terms of the choices that people might make on the face of it.
Or if you park on Wheeler, it's free.
That on-street parking is pretty cheap, maybe even free. So we would like to incent the travel choice for people to choose to use transit or bike or walk or carpool, but we would like to make sure that the pricing signals that we give people suggest the behavior that we would like them to choose. Next slide. So currently we use an event parking district around Geldwin, and that's the model we would like to use. We in that model, what we do is we only price the parking on evenings or Saturdays or Sundays when there is a major event. So we use our smart meters that have the ability for us to be flexible. We implement both extended hours and we have a price then that really more reflects the market rate for pricing when you have one of these large events that generates a lot of travel and parking demand. So in the Rose Corridor, what we would do is extend meter hours to 10 p.m. only on event nights, rather than extending those hours Monday through Saturday at all times or all weeks. And we'd set the meter rates during those event days and hours to better reflect basically market rates and reflect the type of travel choice that we want people to make.
So this will not be used for any convention center events?
Right now, we don't anticipate targeting the convention center. That is a possibility. What we have talked about to date is having the events focus on when we basically have something like a sold-out event at the Rose Garden, which would be Trailblazer basketball games and major concerts and the occasional other special event that's there. About 60 events a year in total.
No major event at the Rose Corridor or the Coliseum, and there's just convention events like the bead show, like the gift show. You would not use the variable pricing for those?
We could. We haven't. That could be a part of the discussion. To date, we haven't. And we've talked about it in general, but it's a lot harder to characterize what the demand is for a lot of those convention center events. Some of them would be, you could tag and say that's going to be a big one.
The problem we have now with mechanized meters, then it's 10 p.m. every night, no matter what.
The other thing that's a little bit harder with convention center is to really understand when the travel demand is occurring. When are people arriving and when are they leaving, and et cetera, and how would you manage it in that respect? When do you start the event pricing, et cetera? So it's more predictable, at least for the Rose Garden events.
Right. Don't we want to encourage people to come to the convention center? I mean, last time I checked, right, we're kind of hurting in that category.
We are, and that's why part of what they're looking at is with an event district, we can put in the modern meters by the convention center that right now we just have mechanized meters and not charge until 10 p.m. like we do every night right now. I mean, right now we've got the old meters because that's how it happened.
Yeah, and that's one of the areas, you know, absent an event, there's very little parking demand in a lot of these areas.
If I could interpret slightly, is you've budgeted and you can bring back to us sort of the 60 events that you imagine based on past practice that are more focused on the Rose Quarter. We already have 10 p.m. parking every night or most nights around the convention center, and council could see sort of the 60 events and what those are like. Of the 60 events, how many of you assume to be at the convention center?
Well, I say what we've done is targeted 60 events that are Rose Quarter specific.
So none at the convention center right now?
No.
Okay.
Yeah. So basically, in summary, and then I'd be happy to take any of your questions, you know, the desired outcome for us are to basically incent visitors to use transit, bike or walk, take some mode other than auto if they can. And through that, we honestly believe we can reduce auto use and parking demand for these types of events. And that's a win-win, really, for the district as well as the neighborhood surrounding the district. And clearly, there's an objective here, which is to generate revenue needed to support the Spectator Facilities Fund. And basically, the concept is here that you're generating that revenue by from users. So questions?
All right, don't go too far.
Okay,
a question, and you can ask. So when did this parking district become part of this proposal?
Around a month and a half ago, we first started having discussions about it.
Part of any previous incarnations that have been underway here for years in terms of us.
No, the event parking TMA started at the convention center 15 years ago, 10 years ago. So that's was put into place a long time ago. The Lloyd District TMA has been working on event pricing options for some time because they get so much overflow traffic into the Lloyd District during big events in the Rose Quarter. So it's been on their agenda for some time. I put it into this because we had issues related to the Benton Block redevelopment, and as I looked at the district and found that we have no parking meters outside this, we have very few. We've got a half a block of parking meters north of Broadway, and we're just giving away spots for 60 odd events a year. It seems like things come together in a natural manner to be able to have this discussion when we're talking about a better use for and the city wanting to feel very secure, trying to provide as much security for the
Spectator Facilities Fund.
Spectator Fund, and that this is a way for the city through parking meters to help secure the Spectator Fund. That's why I asked that it be put in. But it was not an item on the original term sheet. But those are my thoughts on why to put it in here now. I think it's fine. I think it's fine to have it come back to the city council, but you've got a confluence, not everybody, but you've got quite a bit of evidence now with Jelbin Field that it helps people just not take their car and get stuck around Jelbin Field. I mean, we feel like we've had some really good success there and raising more revenue for the Bureau. And we really don't manage the parking very well around the major events around the Rose Quarter. So that's what we're building off of is our success at Jelbin Field.
I think last night was a good illustration as well. Jelbin Field had event pricing around it because the U.S. Women's soccer team was playing a match there. So people parking around that facility were paying the higher rate per hour. Around the Rose Quarter that had 15,000 plus people for a Bruce Springsteen concert, my party parked on the street for just a few dollars. So you know, those were both two very large events, both very good for the spectator fund in terms of the user fees and the parking revenues on the street in one area were very different than the other.
But meter parking revenues do not go to the spectator fund.
In this proposal, no. they would.
But I'm saying around portion would. Jeldwin.
Correct.
Jeldwin does
those
not.
Revenues yeah. do not go to the spectator yeah. fund.
They do the, as proposed here.
No,
that's,
but I would say
that's
they,
why I included it.
They I honestly, I think I can say they help the meter revenues coming back to us help us do the operations we need to do to manage parking traffic around Jeldwin Field so that we don't have to go back to the spectator fund for more help, basically.
So, Betsy, I was just wondering, did you notice whether TriMet was checking fares at the Rose Garden exits?
I mean, I did not.
She drove her car.
Well, I was very impressed that they were.
Actually, my father drove the car.
We're at Jeldwin Field. I also have, and I thought that was good, the commercial parking lots that are, or the surface parking lots that sometimes, there don't seem to be commercial lots most of the time, but they are on event nights. Does the city get any revenue from those?
No, those are private lots, except for the Benton lot, which is a surface lot, and there's another 35 spaces or so.
And they're all permitted as commercial parking, but they only get used on event nights?
I don't know.
That's
a good question.
I think that's something to look into, and also allowing potentially institutions in the area to rent out their parking, perhaps with a cut to the city if they have it on event nights.
Just interesting.
That's something we could follow up with.
Yep.
Bring back.
Commissioner Fish?
I'm not sure who I should direct some of these questions to, so I think I'll just number them on the record, and if and I don't actually even need an answer today, but let me just go through a few.
We do have Dean Alexander and Jack Graham coming up with a little more information for you.
On which piece?
On both pieces, I believe.
Do you think we should wait to hear that first? I mean, I'm happy to.
Dina says yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. And before turning it over to them, I was reminded by the mayor's comment about the PowerPoint presentation that the three of us and those that are testifying today did not do this alone. And I just brought up a quick list of some of the other folks on the city PDC team that have participated. Jonas Beery from OMF, Eric Iverson and Lisa Grant from PDC, Atta Mansouri and Peter Pariseau, as well as Amy Ruiz and Jennifer Yoakum from the mayor's office, Susan Hartnett and Ben Smith from OMF, Kevin Brake from PDC, who is now off in Australia, Denise Case from Radler White Parks and Alexander, Mark Moline and Ken McGare from the city attorney's office, as well as Jim Van Dyke. So, there have been a lot of people participating in this project for a long time.
And thank you all very much.
So I'm that was turn it over to Jack and Dina.
So this is even more details. And I think it's probably along with Scott to answer detailed questions. So let the dance begin.
Mayor Adams, Commissioner, once again, Jack Graham, CAO. I want to just briefly talk a little bit about the fiscal implications of this deal. I want to start off to say that Council's direction, decision to keep the VNC open is key to how we have been viewing the future of the Rose Quarter and the Deal Points. Now that we have the Deal Points for the renovation are complete, the fiscal implications have become much clearer. As I indicated when we first started this project, that we had anticipated that the deal would not place an increased risk to the spectators facility fund or the general fund. Based upon the deal that you have in front of you today, the project cost to the spectator fund is greater than originally anticipated, but I believe is totally manageable. The project cost to the Spectators Facility Fund is greater due to the following reasons. One, there was a $4.4 million loan from PDC. The increased commitments to repair, maintenance, and capital improvements on an annual basis, and the sharing of net operating losses. I just want to briefly go into a little detail about each of those three that I mentioned. The loan, the way we've mitigated some of the impacts is that we've structured the repayment of the loan to minimize the impact on an annual basis, which would be $338,000, but that's not going to be starting until 2018. So that gives a lot of time for things to occur that's going to minimize some of that impact to the Spectators Fund. Maintenance and repair. The fund will be responsible for covering up to $250,000 of repairs that will include inflation. I feel that this is a wise, continuing investment in the building so that we can maintain the capital infrastructure and also to prevent, you know, potential costs in the out years. Betsy, during the staff presentation, talked a little bit about the sharing of net operating losses, but I just want to repeat that again, is the city will be responsible for a portion of the net operating losses up to $250,000 a year. Under the city of PAM operating agreement, we will be able to recover losses from operating profits in subsequent years, so there is ability to have a recovery of those losses. Like I said, I think that these costs, these increased costs, are manageable, and I think that it's going to be a benefit for this whole project. I do want to point out one thing that's not totally associated with the project, but I think council need to be aware of it, is that we do have some concerns regarding the health of the fund based upon some outside factors that are not related to this project. They are primarily associated with any decrease in revenue fees as a result of the Blazer fees. Blazer fees is the largest source of revenue to the fund. We believe that it will pose some risk to the Spectators Fund in the years probably 2017, 2018. And we'll be monitoring that to get back with council. These are things that are up.
Why is that?
It's just the fact if there is a decrease in attendance, we get less the dollars for the user fees, so that will go down. So a lot of it is based upon the performance of Blazers and what occurs in that time. So we monitor that all the time. And we're saying that our projections are taking that in consideration. But I wanted to make sure the council is aware of that. That is totally outside of our control. But, you know, we need to let you know that that's an impact. We, as you know, when the NBA went on strike for a half season, that had an impact on to revenues and everything. So I just want to keep that in the forefront of council, that there are risks that are not associated with this project, but there's risks that we have to take in consideration as we move forward.
And again, I don't mean to hammer on it, but one reason why I put the event district as a way to diversify funds back into the Spectator Fund, that seems totally fair, given that the cars wouldn't be there if there weren't events at Rose Garden Arena or at Veterans Memorial Coliseum.
Thank you. And so I just wanted to lay out those risks and tell you that, you know, while this deal is like a no increase risk to the general fund, I believe that, you know, or the Spectators Fund, I feel that the risks that I outlined are manageable. And I think that what this does by implementing this project, it does meet I feel the original intent of council would be to keep the Spectators the VMC open as a venue for sports events, you know, community events, and as a tribute to our veterans. And so I'm going to turn it over to Dina to actually talk some more about the legal aspects.
Before you do that, could I ask a question about
the
Spectator Fund? Do we have any estimate of how much more ticket taxes we'll get from having the women's soccer team franchise?
We are working on those numbers. Our initial estimates, and these are some rough estimates, is that once we look at the ticket prices and projection, I think it's about $100,000 annually. There's 11 games. I think we have projected the ticket fees, you know, right now at $20 a ticket. So we're looking at that, and we're hoping that the team is successful.
And will be successful.
Well, yes, ma'am.
Playoffs.
Will be successful.
Playoffs. That's where we make our money.
Yeah. So we're going to be updating those projections, but that's what
but
we're
that's about the ballpark.
That's a planning. That's a planning.
Nice. That's something that we weren't expecting at the beginning of this discussion.
Jack, I don't want to unduly complicate that, but they haven't actually decided they're going to play at Jeldwin. So because they're anticipating 3,000 to 5,000 fans, they may end up playing at University of Portland, Concordia, or other venues as well. So that could impact the
I think we would be then at status quo, but we're going to root for them to be at Jeldwin.
Yeah, really. Is there any way we can get ticket taxes at the University of Portland?
Mayor, Commissioners, I'm Dina Alexander.
Absolutely wonderful last night, so I think they should play at Jelwyn just because the spectator experience. Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
No problem. Again, Dina Alexander, Radler White, Parks and Alexander, outside counsel to the city on this transaction. The mayor's office has asked me to actually go through the redevelopment agreement and the project funding agreement with you section by section. I will keep in mind.
Just as punishment.
I mean, apropos of something that Commissioner Leonard said earlier, given the day we had yesterday and today, I have a lot of questions. I'm happy to go through that, Mayor. I'm not sure you have the freshest counsel to be tracking. You are creating a record, but I'm not sure.
I'm happy to do whatever the you're right. We've taken up our allotted time.
I think it might just get to a point where even Commissioner Leonard is having trouble keeping up.
Also, we'd like to hear.
You want to ask
my bellwether. But I also want to be respectful of
one person. We also have one person signed up. Okay.
I didn't think we were taking testimony.
Yeah, both
days. We're taking testimony.
Yeah, we have one person signed up.
Okay.
So
maybe if we took testimony could, and then I come back to my questions.
Yeah, would you excuse us while we take testimony? You might not have to do your interpretive dance through the notebook.
I will do whatever is your pleasure.
All right, thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Mr. Fry, would you like to come forward, please? And while Mr. Fry is coming forward, he's a veteran that has firsthand history of the building of the Coliseum and has attended every meeting that we had as a stakeholder advisory committee and spoke at each one. Commissioner Fritz and I had an opportunity in our rededication of the Memorial Gardens to meet Mr. Fry's family, and it's great. I just want to thank you for your advocacy on this building. I'm glad you're here.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Gil Fry, and I'm a veteran of the Korean War, although I served in Germany. With 3 minutes to talk and short notice, I decided to award our mayor a thank you in the form of a legacy certificate. The Memorial Coliseum is preserved and renamed Veterans Memorial Coliseum. Your honor, your legacy is accomplished on this issue. I have added many others who have been supportive of my efforts at some time or another in the last 12 years. I will share these names as long as time permits. And I decided I'd check off about 15 names and leave the rest unless you'd like to hear them. Amanda Fritz, Dan Salzman, Randy Leonard.
I made the
Nick
list.
Nick Fish, you made the list. You voted yes in one of those elections.
I was sure I wouldn't be.
You are being generous, Mr. Fry.
Oh, we've heard enough names. Let's move on.
Yes, sir.
We haven't yours yet.
Lance Duncan, who has attended many meetings and been very supportive of all of my efforts all along. Coach Duncan.
Coach Duncan.
Trudy Reiser, Ken Reiser, Leroy Arnett, Del Arthur, Paul Osborne, Terry Scott, Marilyn McGavin, Brian Parrott, Phyllis Packard, Will Mocht, Michael Mock, Peter Meijer, Doug Obletz, Al Peters, General Fred Rosenbaum. With that, I think I'll let it go unless you'd like to hear some more.
I think you skipped over one.
Oh, he threw me.
I didn't mean to do that.
No, I heard it.
Did you?
It was
okay.
Nick Fish.
I tried to close the record after that, not before.
If I made it, he certainly made it.
Well, that went pretty fast. I'll go ahead and rattle off a number more.
Yeah, please.
Ken Doty, George Hager, Howard Fry, my brother, Ken Buckles, Lou Barris, Bill Courtright, Terry Emmert, Mark Garber, Mary Gifford, Jim Galligan, Jerry Giglieri, Nathaniel Haynes, Orville Herman, Ken Hodge, Ralph Hatley, Ty Kovacs, Jane Lostetter, John Murphy, Misty Euler Mozzie, John Ogle, Harvey Platt, Norm Stewart, Jim Smith, Tom Tedford, Bill Shonley, Steve Winstead, Ed Zumwalt, John Adams, Jesse Lott, Leroy Cameron, Bill Scott, Marilyn Clint, Stuart Emmons, Jim Flynn, Lee Flagel, George Hawker, and Nicole Heft. And that does leave out some people that I'd like to add to the list. but I have a certificate here for each of you. And do you want me to hand them out to you right here?
Sure.
Okay.
We'll give you. We'll let him, as an esteemed veteran, approach us.
Thank you very much, Your Honor.
This is my absolute honor.
This is a draft copy. When it gets revised,
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Amanda,
thank you.
You voted yes at the right time.
You voted yes at the right
time. It's a very humble certificate.
These are awesome. It's obviously heartfelt.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Frey. So if it's the pleasure of council, just starting with Commissioner Fish, just sort of go down the line and we'll get questions out there that staff can work on or answer if they're short. And we'll come back at it and have more conversation and discussion at our next meeting. Commissioner Fish.
Thank you. And Mayor, if I'm given the hour, I'd be pleased to put the questions on the record and get answers later.
Great.
If that's the preferred option. Thank you for a very detailed and clear and thoughtful presentation. I have a number of questions, and they're not in any particular order. The first is, Betsy, you identified the percent for the art program would fund the Veterans Memorial Garden renovations and upgrade. And the question I just wanted to pose is, if we wanted to maximize that contribution, because I know it doesn't generate a heck of a lot, but if we wanted to maximize it, could we, in effect, waive the requirement that it go through RAC, and in other words, that they not take out an administrative portion and put the whole amount into the memorial, since my understanding is that will be done by PDC anyway, so it's just a question whether we have that authority. I believe that adds a little over $100,000 to the pot, so that's a question. Description that we've received of the VMC renovation project and the option agreement and Rose Quarter event parking, the two different components of this, I want to ask just a very basic question to help guide my thinking about this, and that is, if it is the decision of the council to move on the first but not the second, does the deal still stand? In other words, can we support the VMC renovation project without addressing the option agreement and Rose Quarter event parking now? And what's the plus and minus of that approach? What how does that enhance our risk? And what if I could just have some comment on that. I looked through the TMA, and I've become a minor expert on TMA recently, very minor. But I guess the question that I'd like to know a little bit more about from our friends at PBOT is the mayor would call them a tranche probably, but I'm trying to think of the right word. But once the money is satisfied, once the funds are expended in the district, the expanded district, and for the allocated purposes, what happens to any surplus and how is that allocated? And to what extent do we have discretion to allocate that money, or does it automatically go to someone's into a pot? I've been thinking a little bit about this idea that we're transferring city property, and I asked, I think, Scott or Jack in our briefing, how it ever came to city ownership, because I think probably a lot of people would have assumed it was in PDC ownership because of the district, but that notwithstanding, because it is city property, I mean, it presumably has a value, and under this deal is transferred for no value, and then it can be developed or disposed of, and the proceeds go to PDC. Now, the benefit to PDC, as I understand it, is those are unencumbered dollars that can be spent either within or without the district because they're not TIF. But I would like to just have a sharper understanding of what's the value of the property that we're transferring. And I guess I haven't gotten my hands around this piece, which is if we didn't transfer that property and it stayed with the city, what options does the city have for that property? I mean, if we kept it and developed it, does that presumably generate funds which would come into our general fund and could be used for any purpose? And sort of what's the difference between the city capturing that money and having those proceeds to spend on its budget versus taking them out of the city's portfolio and giving them to PDC? Presumably there's some both value of the dirt and some prospective future value of the dirt that, the city could just as easily realize, and I just want to try to quantify that if I could. I had asked a question of one of you privately about if we pulled the plug on the whole thing, what happens on the TIF side, because I believe a future colleague has raised that question, and the answer you gave me, which I think ought to be on the record, is that, in fact, the bonds have already been sold, so the money is to be allocated within the district. We can't unwind that, so there is money to be spent. It's really the question about how we spend it.
And that, just for the record, you know this, but for the record, that was as part of the earlier action of council in preparation for this proposed development agreement.
Yeah. And the reason I raise it, Mayor, is because I've heard this issue about, well, why not just unwind it? Well, I think it's fair to say we've already gone down that path. Council's agreed to do it. I don't want that to hang out there as
I think the previous questions, it's more appropriate for us to answer them later, but that particular question I think we can answer in that because the district was up against the date that you could no longer issue debt. So generally we wait, you know, until there's a real need for it. In this case, we had to, or we wouldn't have it available for this project or any other.
And that was done with the full concurrence of the council.
Yes.
But that's not generally known, so I wanted to make sure people understood that. I have had a couple of people ask me why PDC and not some other entity. And I'd like to just get your thoughts. For example, why not Merck be the operator? Why is PDC better suited to doing this than Merck, since Merck does have a traditional role with other assets of ours, but just the why. I was thinking when you were talking about the TMA, and I tried to follow the boundaries on the map, but I wasn't clear about what the impact of the extension of the TMA would have on Portland Public Schools and the parking that parents and other users of that facility have at Blanchard. So I'd just like to know a little bit more from PBOT on that, because that's actually where I often park when I go to those events, because their lot is often full. But I didn't know whether the lines covered that, and that became controlled parking, which
should, but it doesn't. But we'll get back to it.
Because for a number of reasons, I understand we're going to move off our green building standards for this phase. And I think, because that might capture some people's attention, I'd like to just have the clear answer as to why. And I think I understand, but I just want to have something in writing that explains the decision we made.
And don't we can quantify that reasonably well, I think, in terms of what it would take, financially what it would take.
I appreciate your patience. And I guess there's finally sort of a philosophical question. In the last few years, PDC has evolved as an agency. And with the projected decline in TIF, PDC is being forced to almost reinvent itself and become a more entrepreneurial agency and find other kinds of revenue sources and other tools in its kit. And I'm just interested, perhaps at a future council, just talking a little bit about what, Scott, this experience for you has sort of suggested about that future role, because a future council and a new mayor is going to be thinking about this, and I would just welcome a chance to hear your thoughts about how PDC might do its business differently based on what you've learned from this experience, because I think it's...
It's interesting that you'd ask that question today, since I spent all morning at our retreat, and we actually introduced Mayor-elect Hales to sort of the outline of how we see that we would be moving forward. And so I'm sure that we will be coming both to you, all of you individually, and to council to give you that picture in the next few months.
So those are the questions. There are a couple of big philosophical questions, which I'd like some help, particularly about whether the two matters can be separated and what are the pluses and minuses. And then there's some specific, and I would be pleased to get your feedback next week.
Okay.
So thank you.
Thanks, Commissioner. Any questions for the moment, Commissioner?
Those were all great questions, Commissioner Fish, and I appreciate getting them on the record. I very much recognize how very difficult this has been, and so thank you for hanging in there and for not giving up and forgetting to this point where it's now before council and the public, and we're figuring out what to do next with the curveball from the from the Hockey League. We will overcome, and I appreciate your point on that, Commissioner Leonard, in terms of unfairness. So we will work on that. I'm wondering why these two deals are tied together, and if there can be a more explicit statement of that for the public, that would be helpful. I'm pleased to see the parking proposal separated out into a second step. And as I mentioned, and Commissioner Fish reminded me, I'd like to see some way found for perhaps Portland Public Schools to rent out the Blanchard parking for event parking, and either they keep all the revenue or the spectator fund does. But regardless, it should be something that nearby establishments should be able to do. As some folks know, I'm a big Ducks fan, and they have, I think, and so is Chair Andrews, 5,000 parking spots, I think it is, for 60,000 people visiting. And part of the reason that that works is because nonprofits are able to rent out their parking spaces for the games. And I hope that the parking system will include a traffic management system similar to what they do in Eugene on event days, because that might be a mechanism to discourage people from parking in the district. It's also really problematic if you're trying to get through that district, not necessarily going to the game with the access. So I appreciate that. I have a secondary question to in response to Commissioner Fish's regarding, would we legally need to declare the property being transferred as surplus? Would the council need to do that? Can the Portland Development Commission sell the property once it's transferred? And again, more explanation about how the taxpayers' money that is coming from the Urban Renewal District will be used to benefit taxpayers in the Urban Renewal District moving forward. I think there is a lot of benefit to redevelopment of the renovation of the Veterans Memorial Coliseum and also to revitalization of the Rose Quarter. I think that we need to, I'd like some more discussion on how do we make sure that that benefits the businesses and people who live in the district as well as the wider community. I think those are my questions for now. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, we will be considering, we'll be having more discussion next week. So I really appreciate everyone's work, and we are adjourned for the week.
I want to apologize in advance. I'm going to be working very hard on a trade mission next week, so I'll be thinking about you. But I have some very efficient and well-qualified staff that will answer all your questions. Thank you.
Thank you.